And now we've got lights and buzzers, and the whole arena goes to black, and the team song goes up, and you'll see the lights will chase, and yeah. I mean, it's an experience.
Hello, and welcome to the Daktronics Experience Podcast. I'm Justin Oxner, here as always with Matt Anderson. Today we're joined by Seth Cook and Bill Hadsell. Seth is a sales engineer, and Bill is a project manager, all for digital media solutions with Daktronics. Today, they're going to talk about everything to do with digital media networks, from sport applications in stadiums and arenas to commercial applications in convenience stores and quick-serve restaurants. They share the versatility of digital solutions and how Daktronics fits into the picture. Bill, Seth, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Hi, Jess.
So can we get into a little bit of background first? Seth, can you tell us how you started at Daktronics and how you got into this role that you're in today?
Sure. I started Daktronics actually a number of years ago. My first tour here at Daktronics I started in 2001, 2002.
Wow.
At the university here. So this, when I was going to the university here, had a couple of different at Daktronics experiences to get what we're talking about today. But I'd worked all the way through manufacturing. I did some project material management, some project management, did some application engineering. Did all kinds of cool projects inside of the company, and okay. kind of grew into the role I'm doing now. I grew up with the role a little bit because my first internship, when I did an internship here, it was interned through Keyframe at the time, and I did technical and creative services in Keyframe. So did things for digital billboards, and that was kind of the genesis of our digital networks, be able to start to pull all of these signages together, and that, of course, is nationwide. And then I worked on a project that specialized at the time to do plasma displays with speakers inside of stadiums throughout the country. So I did some of the install and some of the design on those, and that was kind of the end of my internship there, and transitioned to a full time gig after that. So that was probably my first introduction, at least to the subject what we're talking about today, and that's been a number of years ago now.
And then you said it's led you into the role that you're in now. So what is your role now, kind of? What are you focused on?
So I do sales engineering for our digital signage or digital media networks systems. That really is, I focus more on the live event side in North America. So anything from a sporting event all the way up to the large convention center. So anytime we have a large density of screens, and I specifically work with the LCD technology, and that over the last number of years has morphed into video distribution over IP. So if they haven't lost all the listeners yet.
Going to get them now.
We'll get them now. Yeah. We'll cut to the bone on it. We take content that we're generating inside of the stadium that's being produced on the ice or on the pitch, and we want to make sure that we can get that as fast of a effort as possible onto all of the hundreds of sometimes thousands of concourse TVs. And I have the opportunity to work with some of the visionaries at the stadiums that are trying to purchase these systems, and we help put it together in the front end. And how do we get this bits to work together to make sure that we can produce what they're looking to put on these displays?
Okay. And Bill, can you give us a quick background as well?
Sure. Yeah, I came to Daktronics through a little bit of a different route. I didn't go to SDSU, didn't grow up in South Dakota, not from Brookings, so I'm a little bit of an oddball here.
You already set it up that way.
Yeah. So I actually came from the broadcast space. So I worked at some of the big broadcast vendors, Avid Technology, Grass Valley, and some others. For my whole career prior to coming here, I was in product management for graphic systems, news systems, storage systems, and some of our server products. And before coming here to head up product management for our digital media networks products. So the products that Seth was talking about just a second ago, those products, along with some, of the interaction in our live events control systems. So the way that these LCD systems, IPTV systems that Seth was mentioning, interface to our control systems for both in-bowl fan engagement experiences throughout the concourses and stadiums and live event spaces, as well as convention centers and some of the other public spaces. So I'm more on the product management side, making sure that the voice of the customer is heard, that we build products that our sales teams and marketing teams can actually go out and promote with confidence. So,
well, you both having deal with digital signage and being in the industry for a fair amount of time, you know, in different areas. But when it comes to the digital signage in stadiums, what would you say has been the sort of the evolution of that versus maybe it was 8 to 10 years ago? How is it different now? It's a toss up. Either one of you can grab this.
Well, I think the in-stadium experience reflects to how consumers consume their entertainment outside of the stadium. The consumers, as you sit at home now, you have immediate access to a lot more camera angles. You have a lot more in-depth stats. You know, your computer's open, checking in your fantasy football teams. So the consumers themselves have come to expect a much richer media experience and a much more on-demand media experience. Gone are the days where the static sign that you hang on the wall all season makes sense. You know, there might be a couple of big vendors that are willing to make that purchase for an all season long spot. But with the technology that exists, it makes more sense for the facilities, the host facilities, to go out to those advertisers and say, we can provide you time-based, date-based ads, and now we can really start to provide you contextual ads. So if the team, the home team's down, let's grab a Gatorade or something. So, you know, so that not it's not just a Gatorade ad or a Coca-Cola ad, or but it is involved with what's actually happening on the pitch or on the ice or on the field. But it's also tied into the entire stadium experience. So I was talking to a hockey customer just recently, and some of their branded moments are so contextual in it to what's happening on the ice. And if you haven't been to a hockey building, when a goal is scored is a fantastic example.
Yeah.
You know, that when the goal horn goes off, I mean, it used to be a light and a buzzer, but now we've got lights and buzzers and the whole arena goes to black and the team song goes up and you'll see the lights will chase. And yeah. I mean, it's an experience. A goal, a hockey goal is an experience. And that can be a branded experience now. So now this hockey goal is brought to you by large vendor A. And it's meaningful for not just the team to be have part of that, but also now the vendor or the advertiser wants to be part of that, wants to be part of that experience and is willing to help promote their brand through financing it.
Right. And you said the whole stadium lights up when that happens, like video boards, LCDs, everything. But the goal's brought to you by big company A. Could that be different in different suites of the building, different parts of the building? Everywhere, just with the digital signage. I mean, it could be all one, all encompassing, but could it even be sectioned off to certain areas?
It is, and we don't see as much of its partitioning off during the big moments of exclusivity, but you can see it sectioned off at different levels of the concourse.
Okay.
There could be a grocery store that wants to advertise a certain brand of products, and those products, even though they're all being purchased by the local grocery store, the collection of products that they're going to advertise in the suite and loggia areas are going to be different than the concourse or up in the top section of the bowl. Maybe a beverage company is as good as well. So a beverage company mm-hmm. often has a beer or a spirit or something that they will change based on the demographic. And these stadiums are smart. They know who know who sits mm-hmm. in these seats. Yep. They know the turnover. They know who their audience is. So now they can go back to their sponsors and say, we're going to provide this type of audience and help you direct this type of ad buy. And although it's the same company that's buying the ad, they can tailor that ad per location.
Yeah, they're customizing it per their target audience and where they're at within the building during those moments. That's yeah. a good thought there.
And so I bring it over to Bill. So maybe there's obviously a lot of technical aspects to this, but what are some of the things that a customer should keep in mind if they want to start targeting these things out? Is there, you know, how many channels do they need? I mean, there's a lot of preparation that goes into when you're first starting to consider what products even go with to make something like this happen, right?
Right. Right, absolutely. I think that it starts with the audience, right? To kind of piggyback on what Seth was saying, that I remember when closed circuit TV was the way that you distributed video throughout a stadium or an arena or a park or whatever. And so just like cord cutting phenomenon has happened at home, mm-hmm. fans expect a different experience now from the broadcast experience where, you know, you get a schedule of TV shows that are sent to you and you don't have any options. That's not how we consume media anymore. Everyone wants to consume media on their terms, when they want it, in their space, and it has to be personal, relevant, You know, and they expect that kind of experience even when they go to a ball game. So the mechanisms to deliver a personalized experience in different areas of the stadium, we mentioned IPTV. That's an ideal mechanism where you take a number of channels, plug those into a network, basically, just like your computers plug into a network, and you consume channels of information based on where those devices, those endpoints, we call them, TVs hooked to endpoints, end up living. And the customer, our customer, has the ability to determine whether or not they want to change the suites to a certain kind of content versus the clubs or lounges to a different kind of content. And that's all based on the fan participation in those areas, right? You don't want to send the same level of advertising to a suite holder that you send to a general audience participant for virtue of the fact that they paid a lot of money for these suites and expect a more premium type experience. So there's a lot of that factors into it. But the technology behind it is rather simple. You're talking about versus sending TV signals and content signals, distributing video over Ethernet or even Wi-Fi in some cases, versus sending it over big radio frequency infrastructure like we used to with closed circuit TV. So the idea is not any different, but the flexibility and the mechanisms to be able to tailor that content to the fan are far more robust and capable today than they ever have been.
And this is all about how you can customize everything for these stadiums and arenas. How exactly does Daktronics fit into that? What are we doing to help that customization throughout the arena?
No, that's a great question. We've partnered with a company that does sort of the hardware technology and some of the software back end to help us do this in a world-class manner. But Daktronics has what we call show control, which is a mixture of products that puts on the show in the stadium already, and we've had that technology for years and are the world leader in that regard. So our show control products actually integrate with these video distribution systems to enable, Seth mentioned, moments of exclusivity, which is, you know, taking over the whole stadium with a singular experience. Perhaps that's branded or sponsored, or going ahead and sort of triggering different aspects of the stadium, different content to different areas of the stadium, and doing that in context with the actual game show that's actually taking place. So our show control products and the way that we put on a show for our audiences through our big LED boards, through the concourse ribbons, all the different displays that we manufacture, we can also do that same level of control for LCD type experiences and TV type experiences in the same facility.
Yeah, because that's what I think most people, you know, when they think of Daktronics, like LED displays is something that comes up. So a lot of the changes that you both have been talking about is almost, it can be from a content side about what's expected in the stadium now versus a long time ago. And I just know a lot of that even just carries on to the main video boards in the stadium, you know, showing out-of-town scores, fantasy scores, red zone type stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Zoned out on displays. So, and you're starting to touch a little bit on the control side, Bill, but is it, you know, why did Daktronics kind of get involved with this? We mainly start with in the bowl, I would say, whether it's main video, ribbon, scores, tables, but then we just started to know that, you know, static turned to LCD signage on the outside. Like, I feel like the progression of how did we get involved kind of in something like that.
So I think it's been natural. If you look at the evolution of the in-bowl experience, maybe the in-bowl experience started as one big video display in one end zone. Mm-hmm. And then the producers became aware of the ad zones that were maybe static along the fascia displays, and those became digital. Then they became aware of the importance of corner boards because we're delivering deeper stats. And now we're to have all of these elements that exist, these digital elements that exist within a stadium, and maybe they add a marquee. And I mean, it's a very quick progression of thought to say, why can't we take this kind of technology and put it into a concourse, or why can't we still continue to monetize that? The concourse is an interesting area because it has it's tied into the in-bowl, the in-game experience, but it serves its own purpose in terms of who's there. And once you once you remove yourself from the pitch, you want to stay engaged with the pitch, but you can still use digital signage in that area to increase the fan experience in that spot. And the one I'd probably, that we haven't even talked about is digital menu boards as well. I mean, when's the last time you went to a stadium and didn't see a digital menu board?
It's been a while.
So people might think that those are, although they're aesthetically pleasing and they're good, they're beautiful to look at and you can make good content.
Right.
There's quantifiable benefits to going to digital signage. First and foremost, and this is the easy one, is that we can change things based on price, based on event. So instead of reprinting and doing all that, we can. A good example is multi-use buildings. Over in Minnesota, there's a couple of buildings that get used multiple times a week with multiple tenants. And now each time that tenant comes into that building or whoever is using that facility, they can change the look, the brand, the feel, and the menu options and the price. And that happens on a, you know, on a daily basis. But if you take that to the next level, there's things that are going to happen on moment-by-moment basis. Maybe there's no beer after being sold after this. And that's, of course, the easy one.
Yeah.
But some of the more complicated ones that are become really business case intensive is if some of the stands run out of a certain type of item or you want to, and that's called 86ing in the industry, they run out, or they want to promote a certain type of item or they want to tie that into a promotion.
Yeah.
We now have a digital venue that if popcorn is announced, let's use a fun example. I'm going to use hockey because it's going to be hockey season soon.
Sure.
It's always hockey season for me. every time they hit the post, they're going to knock popcorn price down by 50 cents.
Okay.
So you hit the post, you hear it ring, maybe you see a flash inside, and now all of a sudden the popcorn price goes down in the concourse. And that's, of course, sponsored by the popcorn vendor or whomever. So when you tie this all together, now a fan's not just watching a game, they're part of an entire experience, even a transactional experience. I don't think anybody would cheer for the puck hitting the post, but now think of the implications of everything that you can do. Now we've really brought that entire experience into the stadium.
Yeah, and we had a guest on talking about their marketing campaigns. Katie Windham was on talking about a race they did on the field, and they had all their concession items in costumes, and whichever concession item won went on sale at that point in the game. So this is a way of like tying that into an entire campaign and saying, I know it's pre-planned whoever the winner is, but once it crosses the line, fans know that item's going on sale and the menu boards can be adjusted to reflect that.
I mean, she said that they would freak out because one of the items was a lobster, right?
Lobster
would never win, but everyone really wanted the lobster to win because then they get lobster on sale back in the concession stands, but never happened.
The other thing the concessionaires will do is they'll do A-B programming and they'll say, let's do this type of menu at this location and let's have a different format at this other location.
Okay.
And throughout the season, can we predict how we've driven fans to different items based on different menu highlights? It's well known in the food and beverage industry that on a menu, they usually highlight a featured item, not because it's always the favorite, usually because it's the highest margin.
If you
promote an item on the board that is the nachos for $6.95, I'm not sure where you're getting nachos for six, let's pretend you are.
It sounded good.
It better be really good nachos.
If you can highlight those and promote, and you can actually elicit fans' monetary decisions just by simple little items like that, and it's an incredible, powerful tool for those involved. Things that couldn't even be available with printed menus.
So I have to imagine there's a way to match that up later, right? So on their systems, they can see that I changed my LCD signs at 5 o'clock, and that's when nacho sales went way up.
Oh, absolutely. And you could do things where, and we've seen this in some national accounts where they take nearly identical stores. Not everything's perfect, but if you have a large enough data set, you can figure it out. Nearly identical stores, and they'll change font size on something, or they'll change where it's ordered in the menu. They'll change where it's at in the menu.
A lot more testing around.
Right. And you can now have a metric to really be extremely efficient with your digital decisions. And this is just for the menu board. This doesn't even include some of the other places that you can activate people with digital content. But the menu boards make a lot of sense because that's right where the transaction happens.
Right.
You can count.
Yep.
You can physically count the money in the till and see how that goes. Having the Lexus advertising is a bit more difficult to to judge that. It's still important that that exists, but it's a really good test ground right at the digital sign at the menu location.
Okay.
So I think it's something that I heard the phrase before, though, where something like this helps out too, because they want to make sure that fans aren't afraid to just stay in their seat, right? So we talked about concession menus helps them get out, but I mean, more and more facilities in professional level, some colleges, right, they're starting to like knock out seats to put in more club and gathering areas. So there's this part of, they want people to feel comfortable getting up, moving around the stadium or arena. Or the phrase I mentioned, I heard it was, I hope I don't butcher this, so Justin calls me out. They want fans to come early and stay late. See, that was the easy one. Come early and stay late. So some place will have people come in, a lot of different things going on. They could be interviewing players, coaches, or just showing other games around the league, but then maybe stay late afterwards because they want it to be a more social atmosphere, which they feel like they didn't maybe like 8 years ago, because when you thought you got up from your seat and left, and then you heard everyone cheering when you're in the concourse area, you're like, crap, was it a home run? What did I just miss? And maybe digital media networks back then was just a straight up live video feed that was probably like 15 seconds off from what was going on in the bowl. So you'd hear the cheer, not sure what's happening, and then you'd see it on the TVs.
Yeah, I think that's what they're trying to cut down on. What you just described was FOMO, fear of missing out. They're trying to cut down on that with all these concourse signage to help show those moments. So even if you're away from the bowl, you don't miss out. And come early, stay late, they're trying to create a full entertainment destination for everyone. It's more than just the game. They're trying to get you to experience everything, the atmosphere that goes with it before and after.
You're just finding better ways to say what I just said, didn't you?
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, ultimately, these large sports venues know the importance of the community that surrounds them. They know people will wear their colors and tattoo themselves with the sports. But, I mean, that's one example. But think about this as an example. When's the last time you walked down the street and you high-fived a perfect stranger for no good reason?
Yeah, it's
can't think of
when's
it right
the
now.
Last time you were at a sporting event and you high-fived and hugged strangers for no good reason? Yeah, besides
absolutely.
Hey, there was a good reason. There was a score that happened, right, and I was excited.
You turn around to who's there behind you.
Everybody's
and just,
friends, right?
Oh, yeah.
So, the sports teams know this, and they try to build that, and their entire brand is built in that atmosphere, and they... We would hope that we can help use some of their digital assets to continue that.
So I think one of the things that probably goes without saying, we're talking about the level of sophistication of not only the fans and what they expect in terms of consuming media, but we're talking about the sophistication of the marketers and the owners and the facilities themselves. A lot of these lessons are being brought in from retail, from other industries. You know, we participate in lots of other industries besides just live events. I mean, we have AdFlow as our commercial digital signage solution. We do quick serve restaurants, retail, even, stores in the mobile phone sector. So a lot of the experience that is being brought from these other industries into the live event space, we're perfectly positioned to help our customers with based on the experiences of our own products in those other industries.
And I'm sure they're trying the same type of thing with adjusting font sizes and specials, probably more tied to even holidays and events that are happening on a calendar.
It's all about context and relevance, right? I mean,
they're doing
that. Those are simple examples, and the examples extend all the way out into interactive examples like sensor-based solutions or, tracking, optical, facial recognition. Solutions like that are still in their infancy, but certainly the intelligence and the desire to have marketing intel and base these advertising decisions and fan experiences on that intelligence is becoming more and more prevalent.
So they're customizing and adjusting based on what they're seeing. They're not just randomly changing something here or there. They're looking at data and making informed decisions as they're making those adjustments.
It's a wise move if you consider how expensive it is to produce and distribute media these days, yeah.
Today, we've been talking a lot about trends in stadiums and arenas. I would say a lot of different aspects in technology. But the area that you guys both help out with, we call our digital media networks or digital media solutions. Maybe just to help people maybe define that a little bit. Are we just talking LCDs outside the bowl, or what do we mean when we're talking about DMN?
Well, that's a big subject, and I think everybody would recognize that the placement of where a digital sign could go is really infinite at this point. Not just our discussion, but if you think about all the places that you've seen them, from convenience stores to you know, to gas stations, to campuses.
To local cafeterias.
To local cafeterias. So I've been assigned to specifically work in the sports arena, in the sports space, which is great because it at least contains it. But it is exciting because you have all those different elements, all the way from the in-game experience to the commercial aspect of digital signage for menu boards to even some of the back of house and those types of elements. Digital signage is a very wide and pervasive category, but I think the simplest solution, or excuse me, the simplest explanation that I could make for it is that it really covers any digital display system, LED or LCD, that are being intelligently and deliberately networked together to bring messages, and whether that's safety messages or advertising messages or just promotional messages, digital media networks. What we talk about focus on LCDs, the small panels, but if you look at the industry as a whole, I think Daktronics is probably the world leader in digital media's networks of systems.
I think as you'll see, as we know, especially in being one of the sort of pioneers of this area, LED displays are becoming, more and more, the pixel pitches are becoming tighter and tighter, and the resolutions are becoming such that LED technology, aside from the higher cost currently, and those costs are coming down, those are becoming viable indoor options for replacing things like LCD video walls. So we see, at stadiums like Allianz Arena in Minnesota, the experience of the club is surrounding this beautiful indoor, ultra high resolution narrow pixel pitch Daktronics display, used very much like a television. Television we wish we all had it in our living room.
Right. And I'm going to go a step further on these definitions. You said IP earlier, and I'm just curious. We talk about IPTV, and how does that fit into a digital media network? That's kind of a distribution system, so to speak.
Yeah. So the word IPTV paints a very broad brushstroke. IPTV would be recognized as any video signal that's delivered over either the internet or a network. So if we're, okay. I mean, in reality, Hulu could be IP.
I'd say Netflix is what came to my mind.
Netflix could be IPTV. In the sports arena, again, if we are fortunate enough to be able to put a fence around it,
yep.
IPTV usually means taking the in-game content and then being able to deliver it in real time, like a broadcast internally. The implication of IPTV is that once it becomes a digital signal again, there's far greater flexibility, not only to where it's delivered, but to how it's being presented at the end. So IPTV sometimes includes a digital signage aspect where you would put a stream inside of a look, inside of a layout, and be able to add the elements outside of it. But IPTV is just it's a good way to describe live video.
And you're talking about the flexibility of it, but also when it's shown on the other end that it still looks really good and that the latency is cut down, right? So like we're saying, you're seeing things pretty much as they happen.
Right, and that's one of the most difficult aspects to it. So if you're sitting at home and you're watching your ESPN 3 presentation, you have no idea what live is. That could have happened 5 minutes ago.
I always look for that replay icon in the top left, but that's my only way of knowing.
It's the Super Bowl thing, the Super Bowl halftime show thing. It's always on that five second, 5 minute delay, whatever they have now.
And Janet Jackson delay.
And we won't jump into the weeds of why that happens, but just suffice it to say that if you don't know when live is, it gives the encoder and the people that are generating that more time to clean up the feed, more time to compress the feed, and a time to deliver it. And you get to touch it a lot more, or in terms of total seconds, to really make that a highly specialized feed. The problem in a stadium is we're not afforded that time. When the ball gets hit on the field or the basket goes in, it happens instantaneous to 100,000 people at the same time. So the TVs have to act instantaneously. So that's a bit of a unique requirement in the live event space. And our partner that we've selected is really probably the world leader in being able to make that happen as quickly as possible.
think the other thing, you know, the TV part is important. So the IP part, the low latency, the instant sort of reaction and control of the system is critical. But the experience also implies that it's somewhat of a TV-like experience where you change channels and different content is mapped to different channels, whether those are camera angles of the game or incoming signals from a satellite TV system like DirecTV or Dish to custom-produced advertising channels inside the stadium or the venue. That experience is very much like what you experience at home, even down to the electronic programming guide and features like that that you expect to be able to sort of browse through and see what's playing and see what content is available to you. So it's not only the distribution, but also the experience of IPTV that is different from a digital signage, which is simply a scheduled rotation of content that is being produced and sent to you without that interactive aspect to it like you have with your TV experience at home.
And it's not to say that ever, you know, one is more complicated or technical than the other one, but when it comes to maybe, you know, an LCD network versus an LED in bowl, I mean, there's a lot of different things going on, right? Because you're dealing a lot more with, you were talking IP a lot right now, but you're dealing a lot more with the networks, with probably their IT people. You have so many more endpoints than, say, you know, like four on a center hung or two if it's on each end of the stadium. How is that kind of to work with? Because you guys go in and you got to talk to pretty much a different crowd than what happens to the LED display people, right? And then sometimes we try to bring it all together with, you know, show control or different things like that.
Yeah, no, it could be 100 displays. It could be 1,000 displays. I mean, we have some installs, including newer ones that are, you know, that are upwards of 1,500 individual LCD TVs.
That's a lot. So
that's a lot of TVs, yeah.
Yeah.
And a lot of signals that you have to get right, a lot of latency you have to take care of throughout a very large facility. So the technology is very robust these days. You basically take a signal at the head end, we call it, which is the origination point for the content. Production control room is an example of that. And you encode that to IP, to TCP/IP protocol. That goes over a standard gigabit network and goes to a decoder at the set top. The TV itself can decode signals in some cases, or a discrete box called a set-top box at that TV location can decode that signal. So you have a system where you encode a baseband content signal, distribute it over a regular network, just like your computer is hooked up to, and then decode it back into HDMI signals for the TV to understand. So it's complex in that the network has to be provisioned correctly and the bandwidth has to be there, and certainly we work with the IT stakeholders at the stadiums more than you would with an LED-type display. But it's also simpler than an RF system. There's no balancing issues. There's no sort of amplification issues that you have to get around with different types of signals in an RF backbone. So it has its pros and cons. And we think that most people who are building newer stadiums or retrofitting stadiums are going with newer technologies like IPTV because of the benefits, the flexibility, the ability to not only control the content, but control the TVs as well. Imagine walking around to 1,500 TVs with a remote and trying to turn them all on and off.
Sounds like an intern job.
Yeah, that would be an intern job. With IPTV,
we'll see in an hour.
Yeah. Click a couple hours.
You missed one in the concourse.
The game's at noon. You got to get there at 7 a.m. and start turning these things on.
That's right.
Because this makes me think back. So I used to do product marketing for control systems at DAC. And this makes me think I used to help you out, Seth, with some basic wire diagrams as to how everything would get tied together. And this is probably, I don't know, 5-6 years ago. But it would be, all right, here's the line from the LED video board. It would do this. And then it was always just a line at the bottom that it would say to the LCDs. And then there would just be like a clump of LCDs there, and it was just it.
that pretty much sums it up.
There's 1,500 of them. Yeah. There's 1,500 of them, but hey, no, it just goes to all these.
It does go to all. And, to add on to what Bill said, the system can be complex, But I've seen all of our customers grow into it. I've never seen a customer that turns their building on, whether it be IPTV, digital signage, or a new LED system that uses every single feature. But the benefit of a relationship with Daktronix is that we continue to coach them and we continue to advise them. And as they see new opportunities for fan engagement, they see new opportunities for sponsor engagement, you'll see them start to add layers of complexity on. And that's how these things go. And I see that as a natural progression. Every second season, sophomore season, junior seasons, and every season thereafter, these buildings will improve their show. So it doesn't have to, what I'm trying to say is it doesn't have to be intimidating right out of the gate. Some people get really intimidated with this idea of having 1,000 screens in their concourse and about all the stuff we just mentioned. It doesn't have to be intimidating at first, but by switching to an IPTV system or being able to engage digital signage, you've put the building blocks in place that allow you to keep adding that complexity.
Yeah, like that, because we've always said, I know in other podcasts too, even when it just comes to LED video boards, seeing what that looks like on day one, the first season they got it, versus like the third or fourth season is completely different. Because first you're just trying to, like you said, you're trying to get comfortable with the new system, make sure it works, and then you can start getting creative and crazy with it.
And we also say our systems are scalable, so you can start with one display, add more, control system can adapt to that and can contain that most of the time. You just have to know what you're trying to do, and it can fit those more screens as you add them or improve and build your show.
And I think that's one of the cool things that I like in the systems that we provide is we actually provide the tools for our users to do that. There's other systems out there that may provide a system that requires a whole lot of re-administration from the vendor. I don't believe our systems do that. I've went to buildings that I haven't visited for a few years, and I'll walk in and I'll see the tools they've used, and they've spent the years and the time developing their skill sets to it, and you'll see shows that I'm just like, that is really cool. How did you do that? And I've been taught by our customers before on how they implement some of these fan experiences or some of these promotions, and I'm like, that is really cool. So I think Daktronix universally does a good job at trying to provide the tools and not always just provide here's what it is for it. It's somewhere in between.
Yeah, even with video displays, we always say, yeah, you can't just say, here's your screen, now turn it on, and that's it. There's stuff that goes on in the back end to get you prepared to get everything up and running. So I think we've covered a lot of different things today, from the granular level of how these things actually work to the higher level of how they can be implemented and how people are actually using them and how people interact with them. And I just want to say thanks for stopping by, guys. I think I've learned a lot from having you guys on here. And before Seth does his mic drop and walks out, I just wanted to say thanks for joining us.
Hey, we appreciate the time. And, you know, if anybody wants to reach out to myself or Bill, we're happy to continue this discussion, and there's some really cool projects that we can point to that Daktronix and our partners have been part of in the last couple of years that really kind of tell the story for us.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you for listening to the Daktronix Experience Podcast. For more information, visit www.daktronix.com.